Welcome to Hidden Layers, where we explore the people and the technology behind artificial intelligence. I'm your host, Ron Green. We're back today with the Decoded episode, where we take a look at important recent developments within AI. We're going to talk about news coming out of Microsoft, NVIDIA, Anthropic, Runway, and more. To help me break everything down, I'm joined by one of the sharpest minds in the industry, our VP of Engineering, Michael Wharton. Michael, you ready to go?
So ready.
All right. I want to start off and talk a little bit about this really exciting new model for Microsoft. It's called Florence 2. And there are, I think, several things that make this interesting. One is it's really tiny. It's like kind of surprisingly tiny, where most models these days that people are familiar with, like ChatGPT, we're talking about rumored trillions of parameters. Both of the variants of this model are sub 1 billion, so just hundreds of millions of parameters, which today, you know, that qualifies as small today. But what's really interesting about it is that it has this like really kind of broad set of capabilities. So it can do image captioning, it can do segmentation, it can do object detection, it can do visual grounding, and it's all based with a prompt interface. So it's text in, text out, large vision language model, which means, of course, it can support images and text. And it performs at this really, really high level. So I want to share some of the specifics. So the models come in two different sizes. There's a base model, which is 230 million, and there is a large that is 770 million. So again, all sub-billion. It was trained on a really large data set, about 5.4 billion annotations, and it has just incredible capabilities. It's got really high performance. It supports zero-shot capabilities on this sort of mixed mode modeling, and it has I haven't fine-tuned it myself yet, but the people who've played around with it say you can fine-tune it really exceptionally well on other domains. So when you put this all together, you've got this really high-performant, multifaceted, large vision language model that could run on your phone. And I want to talk a little bit about the architecture because I think everybody's going to find this really interesting. So I mentioned it's got a unified prompt-based representation. Have you seen many sort of mixed capable vision language models like this before?
No, I think there were some rumors about that with, I think there was a closed source version of SAM that they held back where they would have some like open vocabulary prompting and, okay, you know, text input, but nothing in the open source world that's widely available that I've seen.
Okay. And by SAM, you're talking about the Segment Anything model from Meta?
Yeah, that's okay. Right. Yeah.
So it's got this unified prompt-based representation, which I just think is fascinating. And the architecture is the DAVIT, which is the Dual Attention Visual Transformer. So it's using a transformer-like encoder-decoder model, but the dual attention version, and I believe this architecture came out a couple of years ago. I want to say this came out like in 22. It has a kind of a unique design where there are both short range and global attention within it. If that's not enough, they also do this really cool thing where they support variable length encoding so that it can perform, it can take less computational power on simpler tokenized images. And obviously that reduces the complexity. That's one of the reasons it can be run on a mobile device. And then the text embeddings come straight out of a BERT model, which I think is interesting. You know, that's going back old school. But you
roll this all. If it ain't broke, don't fix it, right?
Yeah, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And so you put this all together, and you have this amazing set of capabilities. So I think anybody looking for an off the shelf model, open source, that you need these types of really low computational dynamics for like mobile devices or IoT devices, you absolutely should look at this, especially if you need some type of like zero shot or fine tuning capabilities. I think we're going to be using this on client projects all over the place in the coming future. I'm really excited. This would have been unbelievable. Can you imagine 5 years?
I was just thinking about that. Oh my God. Like, we've so much time spent just trying to curate data sets.
Yeah.
I mean, we've done entire labeling runs where we shop out to tons of people. I mean, that would have been nice.
It really is amazing. And my understanding is part of the way they achieved this was through taking other models like YOLO 8 or something like that, that were actually already really, really highly trained on one domain, like object detection or segmentation or whatever it may be, and then use those as sort of a teacher for this model. And so they were able to leverage the powerful, but, you know, sort of very narrow capabilities of some of these other models. So I think this is fascinating. I think this is, you know, another example. This is, I think, the third Decoded episode in a row where I've brought up some of these smaller, less parameterized models that are performing at a much, much higher level. And I think this sort of distillation is something we're going to see more and more out there. Okay, I'm going to throw it to you. What else in the news happened recently that you're interested in?
Yeah, so very recently, Microsoft, well, it's been going on this year, but they just open sourced this implementation of GraphRAG, which they've been doing a lot of research on and trying to pioneer. And I think it's really impressive and interesting. I think it's probably worth just going into what it is.
Step back. What is GraphRAG for all of our listeners?
Yeah. So most people here that are listening to this, I'm guessing you've heard of RAG, retrieval augmented generation. It's just a way to take large corpuses of text data usually and encode them in such a way that you can retrieve relevant parts that are important to a particular prompt and then put those in an input for an LLM so that it fits the context window.
And you would do that why?
You do that just because your corpus of data is so ginormous that it's not going to fit in your context window as is. So you need to find only the important bits.
And then just to flesh that out, and then once you've retrieved that information, you can put that within the prompt context. So then the model has that and it helps avoid hallucinations and it can help it be specific when it's maybe generating detailed output with facts and things like that.
Yep. Couldn't have said it better myself. That was perfect. Right. So with graphs, the thing that's interesting in that is that you have this previously encoded sort of contextual relevance just baked into the fact that it's a graphical data structure. So there are already nodes, there are already edges, right, and already has that important information on, you know, what does relevance mean? That's encoded in the data structure already. So you can imagine if you have that graph to start with, like a really impressive, like a really well-built knowledge graph, maybe you're doing something like tracking a bunch of different components in a manufacturing company that are all interconnected with assemblies and things right, like that. You know, having a really well-built knowledge graph can really help in that retrieval process. And anybody who's played around with these systems at all has probably realized that it is very sensitive to that retrieval process. And the quality of your output definitely depends on how good it is that you can, or how well you can retrieve these inputs. So Microsoft's been doing some research on this, and they had a paper released earlier this year. But the cool thing is they have this awesome open source repo that they just released, MIT license, which I think is the most permissive one that's out there.
Yeah, that's one. That's
like
one
just
you
do
want.
Whatever the heck you want with
right,
it.
Right, right.
And it's got, not only does it have their GraphRAG implementation, which obviously they want you to host it on Azure.
Right.
But they also have all the code in there that they use to build knowledge graphs on new data sets, which alone just by itself, I think is very interesting. You know, it's got all their prompts that they've tuned. It's got everything you'd need to look at a large corpus of text and pull out entities and relations.
Okay, let me make sure I understand that. So you're saying with the graph portion of this code base, it actually includes the code that you would need to take your own data. And does it do this automatically? Will automatically find the relationships and connect those graph nodes together?
Yeah, they do recommend that you fine tune that a little bit for your own data set because they're, I think it's a CYA sort of thing. They don't know what your data looks like ahead of time. Right. But yeah, they do have all that prepackaged in there. And it's sort of, when you talk about GraphRAG, it's so dependent on how well that graph data structure is built. But yeah, they have it in there and you can go to town, build your graph, and start querying it.
That's a good move. I like that because it's open source, but then they're also kind of leading you towards, you know, their use of their own cloud platform with some of the built-in graph stuff. But you don't have to use that, I assume.
No, you can host it on whatever infrastructure you want.
Okay.
But one cool thing I think about these that I wanted to bring up is that, you know, in playing around with RAG systems myself, I've noticed that there are certain flavors of queries that you can ask that routinely fall down because of the way the data structure is built. Mm-hmm. Things like, you know, you have this large corpus of news maybe, and you want to know what were the five most frequently asked about topics or discussed topics. Those sort of enumerated lists, when you ask for that, RAG systems fall down because there's no notion of importance due to frequency or anything like that. Whereas with a graph data structure, you do have that encoded directly in the data structure. Mm-hmm. And you can start to ask queries like that, which is, I think, pretty cool.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Okay, the next thing I think we have to talk about is Anthropic's release of Claude, yeah. 3.5 Sonnet. We have to talk about this because large language models, ChatGPT, that's what most people today think about when they think about artificial intelligence. And based upon most of the metric boards, it looks like Claude 3.5 Sonnet is now, in most of these metrics, the leading LLM out there. Now, normal caveats, never trust the benchmarks, use the model yourself, you're the best judge of this type of stuff. But I've seen a lot of buzz about the high performance that they're seeing in this model, and I've played around with it a bit myself. But that's actually not the reason I think this is so interesting. There are a couple of additional things that they've added with this release. One is artifacts. Have you seen this a little bit? Where mm-hmm. So artifacts.
It's fresh to me.
All right. So artifacts is this new sort of combined dual interface. So you can say things like if you ask Claude to generate, maybe you upload a PDF and you say, I want you to generate an interactive dashboard so that I can explore the data within this PDF. We'll actually show that in the artifact window, and you can on the fly add tabs to it, add controls and widgets, and it sort of does this automatic UI programming. I've seen people, I've seen on Twitter and YouTube people doing game development, visualization, graphing, et cetera, like that. I even saw one of my favorite parts about this is somebody was using an artifact and it generated some code that then had a node import failure. And you just copy that, put that in the prompt, and it fixes it and keeps on trucking, which is really cool. Another thing that I think is really interesting about this release is they also added something called Console. And Console is this sort of dedicated new interface to help users come up with production quality prompts. And it's even iterative. And not only does it allow you to take those prompts, iterate on them, but it has built-in role settings so you can tell the model to take on some specific type of role. You can do chain of thought reasoning, which for our listeners out there, that's when you have a model not just generate the output directly, but explain itself why it's generating the output, why it's taking the different steps it's taking as it takes them. That can often, as you know, lead to much, much better output. But it also has structured templates with XML tags. So you can feed in some format, you feed in a prompt with the format and be explicit about what type of format you want to be filled out. And it's this really, really nice iterative loop, which I'm just really excited about. And I actually used it for a project last week, and it worked fantastically well. Couple more notes. One is, I love their policy on data training. Anthropic, mm-hmm. as you know, takes that very seriously. They promise never to train on your data without explicit permission. And then I found this tweet from an Anthropic employee, Alex Albert. He said that Claude is starting to get really good at coding autonomously and fixing pull requests. They're using it internally for that. And he says it's becoming pretty clear that within a year's time, large language models will be doing a large amount of the coding we see out there. So I love that you could be in GitHub, you could have a trouble ticket, or you could have a bug, and you could literally use that as the prompt into a large language model to go find the bug, fix the bug, create the code commit, and push it all closed loop, which is astounding to me.
Man, I love the personality behind Anthropic. I know OpenAI gets a lot of hype and they get a lot of the press, but yeah. Anthropic just seems to have a really good level-headed approach. And I saw something, I think it was last week, that they announced that they were actually going to fund third-party evaluations.
I didn't see that.
Yeah. So it seems like they have a genuine interest in trying to build a really incredible product.
And, oh, I love that idea.
I mean, those features sound incredible. I can't wait to check them out.
That's brilliant. Yeah. And one of the hardest parts about metrics these days is we are now in the realm of subjectivity, right? It's,
everyone's state of the art.
Everyone's state of the art. And it's just in the eye of the beholder more and more. All right. But so I'm really excited about Claude. What do you got next?
My next topic here is about the NVIDIA AI Enterprise offerings that they're starting to really roll out this year. A big thing that underpins that is this thing called NIM. It's their NVIDIA Inference Microservices platform. Okay. And I think the reason I'm so excited about it is not because it's revolutionary or anything. I mean, to boil it down to just one sentence, I think it's kind of like, it's like Hugging Face. It's a place to access a bunch of open source models. But the cool thing about it is they're deployable in a production setting pretty much from the click of a button in this infrastructure. You can go to their website, and if you pay for cloud credits, you can actually host open source models, just click of a button, and it's yours to call on with your input. But it also is underpinned by this standardized, abstracted format for, I mean, this might sound familiar, but it sits on top of Docker containers, uses pretty standard REST API interface. You know, it's the same framework that we've been using for years and years at Kung Fu. But I'm excited because they have enough traction and they have enough visibility that I could really see this starting to stick and really catch on as being sort of a standard way of deploying models. Yeah. Whereas, you know, all the three major cloud providers, you got SageMaker, Vertex AI, you got all that stuff. You got Seldon, Kubernetes, BentoML. Like, there's a huge list of people that have tried to crack this nut. Right. And all of them work to some extent. It's just that there's not enough widespread adoption for it to really catch on. And I think that if NVIDIA succeeds in having this be sort of a standard cloud agnostic way of deploying, you know, you can deploy locally on-prem, in a cloud, on edge devices.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask you. Can you deploy on your own hardware?
Anywhere you got a Docker container that you can run, you can use this framework.
Interesting. Okay, is it a library that you can, is it an open source library that you can download?
It's, so when they say NVIDIA AI Enterprise, it's sort of an umbrella that captures all the open source releases that they've been pushing out for the last several years. Right. And part of that is like Triton, which is their, you know, the actual deployment framework, which it is open source. I think it's like a YAML-y kind of definition for models with, you still put PyTorch code in there and stuff.
Right.
But yeah, I really hope it catches on and becomes standard, because a lot of that we sort of reinvent from project to project just because we have to. It's all different environments, interfaces, people, UIs, whatever.
Right.
But yeah, I hope it sticks and allows us to save some time.
I love that. If they're using Docker and they're putting some type of light RESTful API on top of it, count me in, because we've been doing that, like you said, for a long time, years and years and years.
Yeah,
I love
absolutely.
It. Okay, I got, this is a little minor thing, but I just have to mention it. We'll put some videos into the YouTube version of this. And so if you're listening to the podcast, please go check this out. But Runway has a Gen 3 version of their text-to-video model, and I'm just so impressed. You know, Sora has released those demos, and I think Sora is probably going to be the best video generation generative AI out there once it's eventually released, but nothing beats a shipping product. And Runway Gen 3 is out there right now, and I've been playing around with it, and I'm blown away. It's got really, really high resolution, realistic photo capabilities. It does really, really nice job on transitions. I think this is maybe the part that I'm most shocked about. You can give it an extremely unusual transitions. We'll definitely put this in the video. I saw one where they took, it was like a chef, and they were, and he was cutting a steak, and perfectly as the steak was being cut, it kind of fell out into letters on the table, which sounds just about impossible to do.
Wait, was this the same model where it was the bald guy with the wig dropping?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's exactly the one. I'm just hyper realistic. And they've also got really high precision keyframing. So you can go in and you can set keyframe points in the video that you want, and then have that guide the video along. So I'm just really, really excited about that. We'll put some videos, some examples in the overlay on the video on YouTube. What do you got next?
Yeah, I just got a few smaller topics here. One just happened yesterday. I mean, my head's spinning. I haven't totally thought through it. But apparently Microsoft, actually, let me back up. Back in November, we all remember Sam got ousted from the OpenAI board.
Right.
And then later on in November, he came back onto the board, got rehired. And as part of that, Microsoft got a seat, an observing seat on the board.
And just back up really quickly, even more, Microsoft was not happy about that, right? The board, which was the board of the nonprofit that sets above the for-profit OpenAI, didn't let Microsoft, their biggest investor, who has put tens of billions into this, into OpenAI, didn't let them know that they were giving Sam the boot at the time.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So it makes sense that they would want to come back in and at least observe, right, even if they don't have voting rights.
Right.
Well, they left yesterday. They decided to get off the board. And the story on the street is that they heard, caught wind that in both the UK and the US, there were some concerns about antitrust violations.
Okay.
Or at least potential antitrust violations.
Well, and there were rumors just a few days ago that Apple was going to be joining the OpenAI board as a non-voting member.
Yeah. Yeah. They pulled out too.
They pulled out too.
Yep. Okay. And actually, I don't know what the timing's like, but apparently OpenAI released a statement that said that they're going to restructure the way their board's formed and they're not going to have investors or partners rather be involved in their board going forward.
Okay.
So chicken egg. I don't know what was first, but
interesting
stuff going on.
Yeah, that's sure. Fascinating. Yeah, I would love to be a fly on that wall.
Yeah, no kidding. Yep.
What else you got?
I got one other one that I thought was pretty interesting. So Salesforce, I think this is a couple months ago at this point, but they released a time series forecasting foundation model. And
I think I missed that.
Yeah, it's called Morai, Moirai, and looking at the benchmarks, it's from them. So, of course, they're just crushing it and everything. I've not had a chance to try it. But we have talked to some prospective clients about using it just as a way to bootstrap those sorts of situations where you don't have a lot of data and you might want to do some transfer learning. But it's open source. You can use it for commercial applications. And I think it's going to be really interesting for exactly those scenarios where you have a really small data set that might benefit from having a model that understands time series data that's similar, just in completely different domains, might be able to really improve performance in situations where you wouldn't have otherwise.
Okay. I like that because, this is maybe unknown to folks outside the industry, but we're still struggling with time series. That is area. I mean, that's an area where I'm kind of shocked at how we're still underperforming as an industry across the board.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there are certain domains that really get a lot of attention, even in computer vision's my strong suit from earlier in my career, but all the foundation models that are coming out right now are so focused on natural images. Mm-hmm. But in a lot of cases in enterprise applications, you care about things like documents. And I'm shocked at I'd love to learn about Florence and what kind of training data is in there, but I would bet my bottom dollar that is a very small part of that corpus that's documents.
Right, right, right. You know, it's funny, you should mention that. I actually forgot to mention when I was talking about Florence 2 earlier, it also does OCR.
Sweet.
Which is, just amazing. It's built in as well.
That's great.
Okay, so I've got a hot take. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
All right, so I think we're in a little bit of this AI hype wave pushback phase. I think there's going to be maybe a time period of some negativity. And honestly, I get it. Every day I wake up, there's so much AI news. We work in this industry. This is what we do professionally. If I'm being candid, I'm almost getting a little bit tired of hearing about AI. It's just so hyped. But here's my hot take. I think AI is simultaneously overhyped and underhyped. And here's why. I think it's over. I'll start with the overhyping. AI is overhyped a little bit because everybody knows about ChatGPT. Everybody knows about language models, and they think generative AI is really, it's synonymous with all AI, but it's just a small part of it. And if you were using ChatGPT and you're entering a prompt and you get some results and you can kind of play with it, it works great. But that's with the human in the loop. I think a lot of companies underestimate the complexity of building generative AI models and deploying them without a human in the loop, where you just have generative content and it goes out directly. We've had a lot of success with generative AI over the years, but we have always struggled on every project to put rails around that, the generative output, and avoid things like hallucination or making comments or referring to things we don't want. And so I think there's a little bit of overhype around generative AI capabilities that will get rectified. There's also this sort of like hype-driven investment mode right now. So much money is going into AI. And all of a sudden, overnight, everybody's an AI expert. Every product is AI powered. Everything is just AI across the board. And when you and I both know that is not true. A lot of those capabilities have nothing to do with AI, and it's sort of just bandwagon time. And I think that diminishes the efficacy of AI and leads to a little bit of the hype. And then I also think that there are some percentage of enterprises out there that view AI as a magic bullet, the idea that you just go build some AI, deploy it, and it'll work magically. And they underestimate the amount of training, the amount of data, hyperparameter tuning, all the nuances and edge conditions that you have to handle when you're putting a production AI system live. So that's my take on why it's a little overhyped. But more than that, I think it's actually underhyped, okay? And these are the reasons. One is we're at the absolute early days of this. I've been working in artificial intelligence for over 2 decades, and I can tell you definitively we are essentially at day zero. And I know that because we haven't even begun combining simple ideas. Take Florence 2 that I mentioned today, this idea of having a model with sort of multiple visual capabilities, or even the fact that they're using the dual attention transformer, which has both local and global attention. They're clever but semi-obvious ideas, and we're only beginning to explore those. The other aspect of this is that most of the major capabilities that are available within AI, let's take ChatGPT's capabilities. Those haven't been deployed to edge devices, to Android and iPhones. And that's because it takes time for these big enterprise companies to integrate state-of-the-art AI. And so most people day-to-day are not actually interacting with state-of-the-art AI, right? They're interacting with the state-of-the-art AI from 3-4 years ago. So there's just a ton of capability that most people aren't even actually aware of. I'm going to keep going. There's also really low-hanging fruit. Most businesses are too focused on Gen AI. They don't realize that there are narrow AI use cases that will have an enormous return on investment. Two immediate projects come to mind. We just built a system that can do automated loan factoring. It's doing billions of dollars of automatic decision-making around the clock. And that is a system that has nothing to do with generative AI or language modeling or any of that. And then I think about the cancer risk prediction project that we worked on that is going to the FDA very soon. It's more sort of classical computer vision, but this is still going to be game-changing. This is going to be life-saving for potentially millions of women around the planet. And it has nothing to do with those broader, more large AI generative models that get all the attention. And then lastly, and to me, this is maybe the most exciting thing, is that we are really, really just now starting to use some of the capabilities that came out a few years ago. I think about AlphaFold and drug discovery, or some of the new manufacturing materials that are being developed right now, or the explosion in robotics that we're seeing through the use of these diffusion policies. And so I think that, like maybe the rest of the world, AI hype, it can get a little bit old after a while, but I really do believe that we are just at the very, very beginning of an amazing time. And if anything, I think AI is underhyped.
Is that all? No, man, I couldn't agree with every. I mean, it's a bummer we don't disagree more on the show. I think that all makes tons of sense, and I think just looking out into the future. Actually, one thing I want to bring up is I think you mentioned this the other day. We were talking about something similar. It's that Apple, you know, they had a lot of pressure to release their Apple Intelligence platform at WWDC this year, but. I mean, was it like late next year or something that they're even going to be able to release this? And it's because of that thing you're talking about where it takes time to get this stuff production quality. You know, there are legal risks to consider. All the stuff that you would historically have to deal with a software deployment, it didn't just magically go away because you're using AI. That's right. It's still there. But I'm a little encouraged by, So I feel all the noise you're talking about. And when I tell people I work in AI, a lot of times they're like, oh, so you do like some ChatGPT stuff or what? I'm like, sometimes it's not even worth the conversation. But I really do feel like we're following that Gartner hype cycle. And I think we're nearing that trough of disillusionment because a lot of people have gone through and deployed these LLM applications and been sitting around. They're like, okay, where's the value that we were promised? We have this really pretty chat interface, but where's the actual value here? But the stuff that you build that's really tailor-made, you have good strategy ahead of time, you know you're building the right system, these narrow AI applications, they do produce value. And over time, I know that even if those people that are going to get caught in that trough of disillusionment, if they're just totally done with it, well, they're going to have to buck up and be undone with it because there are competitors that are out there that are actually getting the value that they were promised.
Yeah, I completely agree.
So I think we just got to keep producing value. And at some point, maybe we'll be in the the Valley of Enlightenment? I can't remember all the names, but
It's up and away.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this was fun as usual, Michael. Thanks so much. And we'll do this again next month.
Sounds good.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to Hidden Layers. This series is hosted by Kung Fu AI, a management consulting and engineering firm focused exclusively on artificial intelligence. If you have any questions or thoughts about today's episode, or if you know someone we should feature, please visit us at kungfu.ai.